welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm delighted to have with me three guests on University Matters today. I have Professor Carmel Vassallo and also a professor from Brazil, Dr. Pedro Alberiche, and also from Brazil, Vini Lucena. And they're going to talk to us about Spanish, Portuguese, Latin America, and it's a pity we've only got 26 minutes because I'm sure that there's so much we can say. I like to give a very brief bio of my guests because it's important, I think, that we do so. Professor Carmel Vassallo has been on this program before, but just to remind listeners that he's the head of department of Spanish and it's called Spanish and Latin American Studies, okay, within the Faculty of Arts here at the university. And his research interests are also maritime history and mercantile diasporas. He holds a BA in social science from the University of Westminster and a diploma as well from the University of Navarre in Hispanic studies. And his PhD is in geography and history, and that was from the University of Barcelona. He's full-time at the university since 1994 and has published in the field of maritime history. Just a few words about Dr. Pedro Alberiche. He was born in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil and as an undergraduate studied Portuguese and English literature and also the pedagogy of those languages. He later attended university in Rio de Janeiro and followed specializations in Brazilian literature, Portuguese language and literature for children, as well as English and the Spanish language. Dr. Alberiche gained an MA in 1995 in Brazilian Literature and Spanish Linguistics, and his doctorate focused on literary translations. He's written four academic books, the titles of which I will definitely not try to pronounce. His university teaching courses cover a wide area, including elementary English for computer science students, Portuguese language and communication, that's a tourism course, and several others. He's involved in communication in office studies interests also through the media, and was responsible for the production and was anchor for a radio program, Save Brazilian Country Music, which I'd love to hear about, yeah. And has also worked in TV on a program called People in TV. Mr. Vini Lucena is also Brazilian and holds a bachelor's degree in foreign language lecture and teaching. He also holds a bachelor's degree in artistic education. He's worked on the development of teaching materials and methodology and managing Portuguese lessons. And he's also taught Portuguese as a second language, developing methodology and evaluation materials. I was very interested to see that he's also been involved in a project restoring documents related to the creation of Recife's train station. I mean, yes. We'll have to ask you about about that. He's a very keen member of ISEC and has traveled to various countries on ISEC projects. He's done volunteer work. And he speaks fluently five languages, which is almost frightening, and is working on a master's at the moment. Uh-huh. Well, welcome to all of you. I think it's a sort of kick-off question for you, Professor Vassallo. Just something about the department and the new developments that are occurring in the department now.
Yes, well, as we were saying just before we start, we sort of kick-started the program. The Department of Spanish and Latin American Studies has not been in existence for a long time. Some Spanish has been on campus for quite a while. But we're very much work in progress, and as we give a lot of importance to Latin America, I increasingly felt that there was a great big gap, which is the other half, the other side, the eastern kind of side of Latin America, which is of course Brazil. in part because of its importance economically, but in part because it's there. As I was just talking with Vinny and Pedro, your other guests before coming in, and a lot of people kind of overlooked that the demographic sort of center of gravity of Catholicism is actually in the Americas. Brazil is the largest country in terms of a Catholic population, and especially now, obviously, we know that we have a Spanish-speaking Pope, so that's even more reason for us to plug Latin America a little bit. This semester, for the first time, we've in fact started Portuguese, and over the next couple of years, we'll be increasing the load, increasing the amount, so that by the time that our people graduate from our department, and I believe that will be in fact something which is unique to our department, they will have in fact competence in two languages. Obviously, as one would expect, they would be highly competent in Spanish, they would be very fluent in Spanish, but also I'm aiming to eventually give them a good fundamental working knowledge of Portuguese in the Brazilian variant. We could argue about why Brazilian variant is, or it's basically the same language as Portuguese at the end of the day, but I find it much more musical myself than the Portuguese of Portugal. But anyway, so that's basically what's happening with my department.
And for students here in Malta going for a course in a language course, they would be looking to see at the end of the day what they're going to do with it. And I suppose this second option to Spanish, to the study of Latin America and Portuguese, mm-hmm. if they can, I suppose that widens their opportunities.
Considerably, yes. As I was telling you just before, I mean, very recently, at the moment, there's a big thing in the European Union about in fact, concluding as rapidly as possible a bilateral agreement. I mean, there are many bilateral agreements with the United States as it is, but concluding a bilateral agreement with a fairly comprehensive one with the United States, because that is really what it's about. It's about Europe and America working closer together. There's obviously much affinity between the two sides of the Atlantic. And even though there's a lot of talk about China and all sort of things, it's still a bit of an impenetrable sort of world. As you know, in order to get, for example, a certain level of competence in Chinese, you require three times the effort that you need for any other language practically. So one must really think very, very sort of deeply about whether it's worth the effort. I'm sure it's worth the effort because it's a fascinating country. But nevertheless, because it's a kind of the new craze, the new thing, a lot of people forget that for one third of the effort you can get yourself Spanish. And if you've got Spanish, it's, as I told you in this article, it's like somebody who knows the violin and just changes to viola. It's very easy. In fact, the other day I was actually reading an article by a Cambridge University professor of French who said, in order to learn French, it's best to learn Spanish first because it's infinitely easier, while French is a bit more complex, particularly when it comes to speaking and understanding the French.
But it's not traditionally here in Malta.
No, it's not, because of a very, 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 it used to be, hopefully towards the end of this year we'll be having a colloquium on Spanish-Maltese relations through the ages, it'll be the second one. We'll seek to show that there was a time in our country's history when Spain was all important. Keep in mind, after all, that were it not for Spanish intervention here in 1565, we'd probably be speaking Turkish at the moment. So were it not for the relief force which came here when the siege was really at its height and the Order of Saint John, a lot of people think it was Italy. It was not. It was not Italy. There was no such thing as Italy at the time. There was the part of the Habsburg Empire, but in actual fact, most of the troops who came were actually Spanish infantrymen. So we must keep that in mind, you know, we must keep that in mind. There was a time when Spain counted for much, and the Spanish Empire, the Habsburg Empire, counted for much. But obviously the presence of the Brits for a couple of hundred years kind of served to somewhat set aside, you know, the traditional enmity between the English and the Spaniards. So there are reasons why, but more importantly, I don't think we should look towards the past. I think it's the future I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the future. The future belongs, despite whatever anybody may tell you, to the Atlantic, even though there's much talk of the Pacific. But if the European Union can find its way. It's, you know, it's a long and complex business the way that the European Union functions. But if it can overcome some of the difficulties there are, and come to a suitable agreement with the United States, a lot of people talk of the United States as if it were a spent force. It's not a spent force. The United States, the Americas, Latin America, and Europe together would really be what it's about.
Well, perhaps I can pass now to one of our guests, Dr. Alberice, who can perhaps tell us a little bit about Brazil, really, from the side of somebody who's lived there, who's steeped in Brazilian history, culture, language. What would you like to tell somebody like myself, who really knows very little about Brazil, I'm ashamed to admit, except sort of Paulo Coelho, perhaps his books in translation, unfortunately?
Well, Brazil is a rich country. We couldn't understand how it's not a very rich country. The welfare of people is not what we hope for because of political problems, politicians, and things that I think it is easy to understand. We are young. We have 500 years. The Portuguese came in, how can I say, maybe
1,500.
Yeah? So it's so young. It's a young nation, if you compare with Malta, for example, that has a very beautiful and very large history, a period, historic period. Brazil has a very rich literature. Paulo Coelho, you have mentioned his name, is so known, and there are others like Jorge Amado and others that are so famous. And one problem was that our language was not so known. So we have only one Nobel Prize awarded, that is José Saramago, who is Portuguese. He is not Brazilian, but it's our language, so we are proud of it. But we also want, we almost had the Pope. The Pope is from Argentina, and a man from Brazil was one of the, how can I say?
Contenders, one of the candidates, possible candidates.
Yes, and so we have more than 8 million kilometers quadrados.
Square kilometers.
Square kilometers. It's so large, it's a so large country. We can go by bus from the south to the north. We need 3-4 days or more if you go from one part to the other. Of course, I think that every Maltese knows the island, World Island, but we really not. Many of us do not know Amazonia, for example. I am from Rio, and from Rio to Amazon, I think there are 3,000 kilometers or more. I live in the center of the country. Tocantins State is the youngest one. It was separated from Goiás, another state. And in Goiás is our federal capital, Brasilia. Many people think that Rio de Janeiro is the capital, but the capital is Brasilia. But many people think also that Buenos Aires is our capital.
Yes, and many people think that in Brazil you speak Spanish.
Yes. So we are so rich. We have beautiful places like Rio de Janeiro, so known all over the world. Thanks, Hollywood, because it has shown many things. And thanks our talents. We have a good cinema directors, as Walter Salles, for example, that is so known, and others. And many things like that. We have a kind people, a people who loves to live, a people who laughs a lot, generally, and it's so interesting. We have a proverb in Brazil, we say, the rich people laughs for nothing. But there, we laugh for nothing, but we are not rich. But Brazil is not only carnival. That's the question. Many people say, oh, Brazil, carnival, Pelé. But it's not only carnival. We have culture, we have good universities, and we work for science and things like that.
Well, that was the next comment I was going to make, actually, because it's obvious to mention football and Olympics and all sorts of things. So, but really, there's so much beyond that that people can get to know. I mean, the richness of the Amazon, for example, from the scientific point of view.
Yes.
There must be so much going on there.
And it's wonderful. You are talking about Amazonia. I remember a trip from Belém in Pará state, from Belém to Macapá. Macapá is the capital of Amapá, so close to French Guiana. Mm-hmm. And a ship travel from Belém to Macapá. I had it in a wood ship. So interesting. 32 hours between the two capitals in the Amazonia River.
On the river, as we're talking about.
On the river, yes. It's so nice trip. Well, it's a continent. We really say Brazil is a
beautiful one.
It's so beautiful. Yeah, I think Carmel was in Amazon, weren't you?
When you started to talk to us about it, you said it's almost inconceivable why Brazil should not be even richer than it is, and the same can possibly be said for other countries in Latin America.
Definitely.
I mean, Venezuela, mm-hmm. with these enormous oil riches, mm-hmm. and it seems so amazing that in actual fact oil has been pumped out of these countries for 50 years, and yet people have not benefited. How does that translate into the atmosphere of Brazil?
It is so endowed, so well endowed naturally, with all sort of things. It's basically, it's like the storehouse of the world in many ways. You know, China, Europe, yeah. have traditionally, Europeans were fed with Argentinian kind of grain, Brazilian beef. It's like a storehouse, but yet there's so much inequality. As you said, it's not always carnival, and this is one of the characteristics of Latin America. It probably has the highest rate of inequality worldwide even. All these riches have regrettably not percolated down to the people down at the street level. There is so many people with so little and a few people with a lot.
The problem is capitalism in this worst sense. That capitalism, I always say jungle capitalism in Portuguese, capitalismo selvagem, yeah. or something like that. And from 2002, we have new things happening in Brazil with the election of Mr. Lula da Silva. And during 8 years, something changed in Brazil in this question of equality. Of course, we have many things to do, but it's better now. But of course, the jungle capitalism says, no, this man is not good. Now we have a woman in the presidency, Mrs. Dilma Rousseff. And she belongs to the same party of Mr. Lula. And of course, there is another point of view now that we must be rich. We need to be rich, of course, and we are rich, actually. But we also need to make rich our people. Mrs. Dilma says that a rich people is a people where the people eat and eat well and study and are also happy, not only for carnival and for their mm-hmm. own sense and the old characters, but because these people can eat and can study and can work and can be free, etc.
Perhaps I can turn to our young guests today. When I was reading your bio, I pointed out the fact that you were a member of ISEC.
Yes.
And that's, in fact, how you found yourself in Malta, I imagine. So tell us about that experience.
Okay. Yes, ISEC is as you may know, a global organization. We are present in over 110 countries. And when I decided to join ISEC, it was because they have the promise of offering internships for a very cheap price. And ISEC is such a reference in Brazil because we don't have to deal with other... we don't have the perks of dealing with other organizations like we have in here in Malta, many different programs. I decided to join ISEC. I became a member in ISEC in Brazil. And then, a little after the first semester that I was working with the organization, I got the opportunity to do my first internship. I decided to go to Colombia. It was a neighbor country, like the culture wasn't so different. And then, in the meantime that I was there, other internships came popping out. So that's why I made my whole experience with the organization. I lived for 2 years in Colombia, and then I made up my mind that I wanted to go to another continent. So I applied for a few countries, and Malta was happily the one that accepted me. And since I am working with Isaac, I have a contract of 1 year, but this is like how long the roles last. And I've been here since July, and I'm staying until July of this year as the vice president of exchange.
We were hearing just before about the size of Brazil.
Uh-huh.
It takes 3-4 days to cross it. Coming to Malta, this very, very small island, how did you find that? Did you find that amusing? Did you find it restricting? Were you sort of shocked by the smallness of the country?
No, actually I find it quite good. For me it has been such a nice experience to come to Malta. Yes, it's true that it's quite strange coming from such a big country and then coming to an island. It's not even about the size of it, it's because the fact that it's an island. When you come to Brazil, you don't even see the end of it, as Pedro was saying. Like, we Brazilians, we don't know the whole country, so we don't even have this impression of distance because it's so big. But for me personally, it was amazing how society manages to become independent in such a place like an island. You have everything in here. You have the same things that we have in Brazil,
yes.
For example.
It's a microcosm.
Yes.
It's of a sovereign state.
Yeah, like it's the same civilization. People are very kind. You have a very good, from my perspective, coming from Brazil, you have a very good public transportation system.
Yeah. It is.
It is, compared to a few cities in Brazil,
wonderful.
It is. I know that people complain a lot in here, but it's actually way better than the ones in Brazil. But no, it's something very nice.
People are a bit pampered here. They don't really realize. So, for example, it's when I hear people complain about hospital and medical treatment here.
Which
and
is also
very good.
They
don't have the slightest idea of what people
exactly.
have to cope with in some of these places in the Americas, for example.
Yeah. Honestly, the life in Malta for me, I find it very easy to live. It's very pleasant. I have nothing against Malta, like nothing to say to complain, because I love the country.
Wonderful to hear.
Yes.
Dr. Alberice, we were mentioning before Portuguese, Spanish, and I know you actually are interested in both languages, and you have some contacts, you were saying, with Paraguay. Do you find on the whole that the countries have good connections?
Yes, we had a problem in the 19th century, a big problem, a war, a big war in which Argentina, Uruguay and Brazil went against Paraguay. And Paraguayan people, of course, does not like to remember it, because it was terrible. We almost eliminated a male population of Paraguay. But it's not forgotten, but it's not a problem for our friendship, of course. And so Paraguay is a place loved by Brazilian people because its music. You see, Paraguay is so small in relation to Brazil, but its music and its culture is so important in our country music. That's the interesting point. The guaranias and the polkas, Paraguayan polkas, are in our popular cancionero songbooks in Brazil. There are many people from Brazil that goes to Paraguay to study in Asunción, master on education and a PhD on education in Paraguay, Asunción, because it's cheaper than in Brazil. So many people go to Asunción. I love Paraguay so much because I like its culture, and it's a very, very good opportunity for me to improve my Spanish. So I like to go to Paraguay.
It must be said, if I may, if I don't know how we're going for time, but it must be said that one of the things about the Americas, of course, is the ethnic variety. Specifically, Pedro was making reference to Paraguay. Paraguay, in a similar manner to Bolivia, has very, very, very high proportion of indigenous people. So, which means, for example, that Aymara, Quechua, Guarani are really important kind of cultural markers of the societies, which distinguishes them considerably from the essentially mestizo kind of altiplano, you know, Peru and Ecuador, or for example the
principally white sort of southern cone countries of Chile or there's a lot of variety, Chile or Argentina. But one thing I want to add concerning Pedro is that in addition to Spanish and Portuguese, he's also one of those sort of merry band of brave people who are very keen on another language, Esperanto. Perhaps you could tell Tricia a little bit about Esperanto.
Oh yes. Esperanto is a language that was initiated by the Polish Lazar Zamenhof in 1887, and it from 1905 it has a year congress every year somewhere, or anywhere. The first one was in Boulogne-sur-Mer in France in 1905, and the last one was in Cuba, for example. We had in Croatia 2 years ago. There are many people that speak Esperanto, but of course it's a nation, a small nation. I think we have a Malta distributed all over the world.
Mm-hmm. It's like a virtual nation in a way, the Esperanto people.
Oh yes.
They don't exist in reality. I mean, there is no territory,
No.
But it is, it exists in the mind in
many
ways.
Yes. The idea is to be the second language of the people. Okay, it functions as an English on cultural aspects. Okay, English is very good for financial aspects, of course, for fraternity. Yes, it can be. But Esperanto has its own characteristic, can I say, rasgo?
Its own roots. Well, characteristics is probably better.
Is fraternity. For example, when I came to Malta, I have contacted Oscar Misfoot, that is an Esperantist that lives here in Malta, and because of him, I am paying a cheaper rental flat.
It's a bit like a diaspora. They kind of hang out together. Yes, and so it's a very, it's a fascinating, actually, language, because they are typically people who aspire, who seek, you know, that there be peace in the world and so on. For
the sort of philosophy behind it.
Yes, there's a whole philosophy, there's a whole mindset among the Esperantistas. My father used to be very keen on it.
And just to end it, the stem, Esperanto has 60% Latin.
Exactly.
30% Anglo-Saxon, and only 10% Slavic. Mm-hmm. So, and you see, Zamenhof is from Poland, Slavic. Mm-hmm.
But Jewish. So.
Yes, Jewish.
So that says a lot already in terms of mindset.
Yes, yes, so cosmopolitan. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. We could have carried on this conversation for a lot longer. I'd like to thank my guests, Professor Vassallo, Dr. Alberice, and also Vinny
Lucena.
Thank you both. Thank you all for being with us on University Matters today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.